This is the Registry Podcast.
Welcome to the Real Perspectives Podcast, where we dive deep into the world of commercial real estate through the lens of industry insiders and thought leaders. Today, your host, Vladimir Bosanats, co-founder and publisher of The Registry, sits down with a very special guest, Jamie Prevost, president of Skyline Construction's Southern California operations. In this insightful episode, we journey into the evolving San Diego commercial real estate landscape, a region experiencing a dynamic transformation powered by the burgeoning life sciences industry. Jamie's leadership and visionary outlook illuminate the path forward for Skyline as they embrace challenges and harness opportunities in this rapidly changing environment. Let's get started. Enjoy the show.
Jamie, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great, Vlad. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Where do we find you today? Where are you?
I'm here in sunny San Diego, just enjoying this great November weather, and just had a Thanksgiving potluck with my team here, so doing well.
Excellent, excellent. Well, good to see you, and thank you for joining us. By way of introduction, Jamie, tell us a little bit about you, about your company, sort of, you know, how the, you know, road of your career led you to where you are today.
Sure. Well, it's definitely been a long, strange trip, I guess, as they say in the Grateful Dead music tunes. I've been in the construction industry my whole life, pretty much starting at age 20. My father started Prevost Construction in 1989 here in San Diego, grew up in the industry, learning from the ground up construction, commercial environments and TIs. And that led us into the life science market in the early 2000s and kept growing our business around the idea of being able to do creative lab and our creative office space, laboratory environments, and then started performing some of the office to lab conversions, industrial office conversion projects that started happening in San Diego through the early 2000s into today's market, and certainly have ridden the wave of popularity with all the life science work that's been happening in San Diego and watching that market grow. And then most recently attracted the attention of Skyline Construction out of the Bay Area, who was looking to grow their business and acquire a local company here in San Diego. So we joined Skyline Commercial Contractors last year in 2022. So we just completed our first year under the Skyline family of companies, and it's going really well. Really enjoying the camaraderie and the diversity of working with a bigger organization.
Yeah, and I'm curious, as you said, you were sort of growing up in the industry. I mean, obviously, the life science sort of industry in general kind of grew around in San Diego. Was that a surprise for you guys, and kind of for a relatively smaller market on the West Coast, how this one industry just kind of, you know, became, you know, one of the bigger drivers there, right? Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was always interesting. I always knew San Diego as a very small town in construction, a lot of relationship-based contractors, and the real estate environment here was on the smaller market side. And San Francisco always seemed to lead the way, right, with Boston and other larger markets there. And San Diego was like a distant fourth, fifth, or sixth on the map. Even Seattle kind of exploded and had its growth phase. But San Diego really started, I think, in the late 80s, maybe late 70s, early 80s, where the University of San Diego really just kind of found its niche and started really growing and spawning and pitching out, PhDs with good scientific backgrounds coming out of the University of San Diego here, UCSD. And from there, just had a lot of good environments for venture capital growth, and real estate environment was great. The weather, of course, is awesome. And it's a lot of good, smart people down here. Started attracting the talent from around the country, and the market just started to grow. And at that time, there was a lot of nice space available. And certainly the Torrey Pines marketplace here in San Diego was the most popular thing. If anyone's ever been down the coast of San Diego and driven through La Jolla, it's one of the most beautiful places on the West Coast. And they just happen to be the central hub of our lab market here. So, after that, developers started coming in and really investing in San Diego. It was cheap and compared to, you know, New York and Boston and San Francisco.
Yeah.
And while those markets were flourishing, San Diego was starting to get legs as the economical place. And I think that's where a lot of investment started happening. Companies started really seeing the potential for the employees here to grow their business and really started making big investments here. And so the market started to explode there in the mid-2000s coming into, you know, the pandemic. And then certainly once we started coming out of that, there was a lot of companies here that were just jumping on the bandwagon with all the COVID-related requirements that were out there for testing and diagnostics and drug development and all the like. So that really then just spurred the market to just go crazy and put us, I think, in the fourth position now. I think we're either third or fourth largest in the market in the nation now.
Yeah. And I would argue not so much a sort of a discount location anymore. Is that correct? How would you characterize sort of the state of the industry here as we talk in the, you know, fourth quarter of 2023?
Sure. Well, it's certainly not the discount that it was back in the day, but, you know, in our travels up and down through San Francisco and Seattle, I'd say we're really on par with where Seattle's at from a price perspective. San Francisco is still probably another 20% above that as far as rent costs and construction costs go. When I see some of the clients that we work with in San Diego and San Francisco looking at similar type products, we're seeing about a 20 to 30% price difference in those two markets still. And I think that's primarily because San Francisco is more of a union market than San Diego. San Diego is traditionally non-union for the private sector doing commercial TI work. But that's also in the life science market. That's also in the office TI market. I mean, Skyline's been a huge player in high-end commercial office TIs for many, many years. They're one of the largest in the San Francisco and the Bay Area, very, very established and well-known up there for the kind of commercial TI work they do. I mean, interiors are interiors. You can kind of take that play anywhere. But the specialization in the life science market, we kind of mastered down here in San Diego and are starting to grow that base now with our San Francisco team, and our Seattle team is right with everybody now, just starting to pick up the nuances of what that product type demands from the type of people and the expertise that it requires to build. So it's been fun to work with those team members over the last last 12 months or so.
Yeah. And the markets that you mentioned, obviously the Bay Area and San Diego and the Pacific Northwest, I mean, those markets seem to be kind of land constrained. You've got sort of ocean on one end and kind of, you know, all kind of, you know, preservation on the other side and mountains and that kind of thing. Has that been one of the challenges throughout the years, you know, land and space, sort of where to build life science, or have you not encountered that as a challenge quite yet?
Well, it certainly is, right? I think land in California in general is always a problem wherever you are. But what I kind of noticed in when I look at the San Francisco market, Seattle, San Diego, life science in particular is more of a suburban kind of market. You know, a little bit of that in Chicago, but Chicago's got a more, you know, intense, dense kind of market space there, high-rise market. San Francisco, obviously, high-rise market downtown. A lot of professional service firms and interior TI office has always been a huge play there. But that life science market is more south, right? It's more spread out. It's more the low to mid-rise kind of buildings, industrial kind of feel and areas. And then you get the occasional, okay, we're going to go 5, 6, 7 stories. But you don't see a lot of, you know, 20, 30, 50 story buildings that are built for life science in these markets. So I think what's really happened now is as that prime real estate ran out, especially in San Diego with the Torrey Pines and even the Sorrento Mesa market started to become very popular. That's just, again, it's a suburban hub. And that's been the focus on the central of our life science market here in San Diego. And now developers are, interestingly enough, they're trying to push into downtown, right? Our downtown San Diego now has developments underway with over 1 million square feet of product coming online now with a couple of projects, the RAD project downtown on the waterfront there, the conversion of the Horton Plaza, big shopping district downtown in the middle of the gas lamp there. Those developers are now betting on the fact that there will be life science tenants that want to be downtown. And that's going to be an interesting play to see if that pulls our market further south. But certainly that's been the San Diego focus for a long time as a central suburban market. And then pushes north into like Carlsbad and Oceanside. We're based in Carlsbad, and we have a lot of space still left to develop up here in Oceanside, especially.
Sure. Yeah.
See big campuses being built. New campuses for companies like Genentech and Gilead and Ionis Pharmaceuticals. You're seeing some push out to the east as well in this marketplace for bigger box, 150,000 square feet, 200,000 square feet. And again, there's just not a lot of demand for high-rise product here. So you see the market spreads out versus going vertical. And that's not always available. In the, you know, I think on the East Coast, they don't have that kind of availability of land to kind of spread out that way.
Right, right. In terms of the product itself, over the last couple of years, life science has been, I mean, really on fire and driven obviously by COVID, but just sort of this kind of, you know, general investment into the space from either venture capitalists or, you know, NIH funding and that kind of stuff. I am curious, are you seeing a certain type of product in San Diego and some of these other coastal markets emerge? Like, are you seeing more manufacturing popping up, or is it still mainly focused on sort of research and lab space at this point?
Well, I'd say a majority of it is still the typical research and development, although, you know, medicines are getting more targeted now and certain types of cell and gene therapies are aimed at being targeted to, you know, disease points or disease tissue. And how do you treat these things without killing off the whole human body just to treat the cancers and things like that. So certainly more targeted approaches to medicine. There's always going to be drug discovery happening, right? Every pharmaceutical company out there is looking for the next pill that somebody can take for the rest of their life to drive revenue. So there'll always be that. But what's interesting too, I think food tech, that industry itself is really starting to develop. There's a big push for alternative sources of proteins out there. We've seen some with alternative beef production, alternative seafood manufacturing. We're doing a large manufacturing plant for organic medicinal mushrooms right now. That's one of the largest in the nation that's fully automated, that produces a huge yield of ground dried mushroom product that's been pretty popular for all the health benefits. So, you know, some push towards that kind of alternative medicines that are more organic and holistic in nature, instead of all the pharmaceutical products that we tend to do. So we're seeing a lot more development there. And certainly just more technology built into the lab environment, more so than it used to be. A lot of chemicals and a lot of, I mean, that's always going to be there, but I'm seeing a less and less concentration of chemicals, more scientific data, and those kinds of things now being tested, and certainly just studying the human genome and all the endless possibilities for the DNA sequencing and things to be discovered in there as science is getting more technology meeting science is really propelling some types of research out there that's a little different.
Yeah, and what's very interesting, and you just brought us to this conversation point. It's how life science has really expanded into other parts of industry, right? Whether it's food, whether it's, you know, cosmetics in some case, alternative fuels, and all kinds of other sort of things. Has that been a big growth engine for the Southern California market and San Diego specifically? And are you seeing that take a bigger chunk of the sort of life science pie, if you will?
Well, it's still, you know, it's a combination of things, right? We see some life cycles of companies where, like a company like Neurocrine Biosciences, you know, in their heyday in the 90s, early 2000s, they were a big company. Then they went all the way down to almost zero. And then they come roaring back and they take 400,000 square feet, you know, a little further east. There was a lot of large footprint acquisitions and absorption over the last 5 years in San Diego. None that I've ever seen before, like 400,000 feet, 300,000 feet, 500,000 feet. Those deals were large in nature. And I think our market's always been a smaller, you know, 20 to 50,000 square foot kind of life science user out there. And smaller, at least as you're coming out of these universities and you're growing your business and they're working with venture capital to start from a 2,000 square foot space to 10,000 to 20 to 40 to 50. Some of the more mature companies are now taking that leap to manufacturing, right? They're now taking over the whole process from discovery all the way to manufacturing and completed products. And so that was something that was new in San Diego, is seeing a lot more of the full cycle happening within the life science industry and also manufacturing being part of that. Some of the manufacturing that was real small, it's like pilot plant, small scale manufacturing, because they want to prove a concept. They want to get the first process out. As I mentioned before, one of the food tech projects we looked at was a company called Blue Nalu that was developing fish products from cells of actual yellowtail tuna and then be able to grow them on a growth media in a lab environment, feed them natural seafood and the type of nutrients that they would get in the ocean, and growing the cells so that they could form a edible fish product, right? That tasted natural, that looked like fish. And I think those are going to continue to accelerate as we run out of fertile farmland in California. We are a farming state.
That's right.
Hard to farm with the lack of water. I mean, you can see the things that are constraining our growth in that industry already, with land and the soil quality and the crazy weather and the lack of water. You know, it only kind of makes sense when you look at it that way.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah. In terms of just the overall demand, I mean, it's very obvious that there's a healthy amount of innovation coming into the industry. You know, companies looking to do some innovative things with life science in general. But, you know, have you seen a bit of a slowdown since? I mean, I think since COVID, everything has probably slowed down. But I'm curious, you know, if in the life science industry there has been sort of a more kind of, slow down in terms of overall kind of demand for space, deals getting done, projects getting built. How would you characterize, and where is the industry now, you know, here as we sit in the fourth quarter of 2023?
Sure. Well, I think it's kind of like if you got up real early in the morning and worked hard all day, you might get a little sleepy in the afternoon and want to take a little nap. I think that's kind of what we're doing. It's like a little nap time. A lot of activity still. I mean, we're seeing a healthy amount in this last Q3, Q4 of signs of waking up. I think the first two quarters of this year were horribly slow as people were trying to figure out what was going on with the banking industry, and certainly what are interest rates doing and when are they going to cap out and top out, and starting to see a few signs of life right now. But a lot of cautious optimism, really. The developer market is kind of frozen as far as putting money into speculative projects. Nobody's really funding ground up stuff unless there's full tenant occupancy commitments, or at least, 50% or more. So that is creating that lull. I mean, there's still a lot of activity with the bigger campus occupiers where they are doing internal construction projects to upgrade or even, in a lot of cases, consolidate operations, right? There's still that work from home thing that can enable some life science companies to reduce their footprint. So a lot of the movement we're seeing now is the restack, where they can get rid of some office space, they can deal with work from home, they can consolidate, but you really can't do, there's no such thing as lab from home, right? So they still need as much lab space as they've always needed. It always needs to be upgraded and updated. The infrastructure that runs in these lab environments runs 24/7, so it wears out in a period of, 15 to 20 years. You've got to recycle all that. And that's what really drove, that's what drove a lot of San Diego. It wasn't necessarily COVID. It was the fact that, coming out of the recession of 2008-09, when this really started to take off was probably 2012, 13, 14, 15, pre-COVID. Those were the years where we were just going gangbusters with adaptive reuse, right? It was like, hey, there's no way to build new life science facilities. We've built a few state-of-the-art ones now. Now it's about this adaptive reuse and converting office buildings to lab. And there was a lot of aging industrial buildings that just needed to be rehabbed. And so that really put the most growth in this marketplace. And I think San Francisco has gone through the same thing, right? The city's built out. You have a huge amount of space and availability all through the South Bay and around the East Bay. And just a lot of that marketplace was starting to grow and build and fuel the fire for life science innovation.
Yeah. You mentioned something about the industry kind of, coming to a point where there was more space needed. There was a need to sort of revitalize some of these properties. Life science, conversions have been an interesting aspect, I think, of what your company has been active in. I'm curious, how that came to be and sort of where are we today with that? Do you still feel that that's like one of the main drivers of development in the life science space, or has that tempered off a little bit?
So it is. I would say it's kind of a 50-50 right now. So there's been a lot of new development, and I've seen a couple of developers in San Diego tear down perfectly good buildings to make way for lab footprint buildings. So that has happened. I believe there's about 4 million square feet of space being built coming into the marketplace here at the end of 23 and into 24. So the challenge right now, and what's creating some hesitancy on the part of other maybe smaller speculative developers, is that, wow, there's a lot of square feet to absorb. Who's going to take all this space, right? Because as I just mentioned, right, the Bristol-Myers Squibb, the Neurocrine, the Amylin Pharmaceuticals, like these companies have taken up large blocks of space, and who's going to now take on these big chunks, right? San Diego hasn't been known necessarily for these large TI deals for big companies, the Eli Lillys, the Pfizers, these Dexcoms. They're usually taking 40, 50,000 corporate chunks at a time, and we did get to a point where demand was high, supply was low, so we had a lot of developer attention coming. Like, that was another reason why I think the smart play for us to integrate and join Skyline was that so many developers were coming to San Diego from the Bay Area, right? You know, and they've always shared this market similarity, Seattle, San Francisco, San Diego, and they're building the same product type, a lot of the same tenants in place, a lot of the same architects. So it made sense for us to all work together and be able to collaborate that way. But the typical, you know, market supply and demand is eventually always going to rule, right? I've seen this is the third cycle of sure. San Diego where there's a huge demand. So we build, and then something happens to stint the demand a little bit, but we're already building. So guess what? Now we're overbuilt and now we've got too much supply. And so it's just supply and demand economics really that's governing what we're doing. And sure, we have a lot of space. It'll get absorbed eventually. It's going to take a little long. It might be a little painful while we kind of sit on our hands waiting for this to kind of speed up again. But, you know, when you've been driving 90 miles an hour down the freeway for a while, 55 seems like you're basically stopped, but it's still, you know,
right.
We're still going the speed limit here. It's just seems like a lower speed of pace right now.
Yeah, the perspective to what was happening over the last 3 years is probably worthwhile saying that's not the norm, especially, right?
We're starting to see, you know, there's signs of life even in the office market. I mean, people are saying, oh, the office market's dead, it's never coming back, and everybody's working from home. I don't buy that for a second. I think what happened in the office market, and it's true, right? There are a lot of people working from home. So what are companies doing? I mean, we still see a lot of professional services firms, law firms, accounting firms that are growing like gangbusters, and they're expanding and they're growing and they're taking more space. But really, it's the pricing that just needs to adjust, right? The pricing of office product got out of control for a while there. And I think it's really a reaction to that. Then all of a sudden, again, you have people giving back space. You have some people that got over leveraged, right? So now buildings and certain space are starting to trade at pennies on the dollar. When that stuff converts and people have lower bases in buildings and prices come down again, I think you'll see a lot more renovation work happening in the office buildings, because there are a lot of buildings that were just shuttered and empty, especially downtown San Francisco. But our company up there is starting to get a lot of activity in the office market with AI development, right? Any AI developers out there, that market's starting to really wake things up a bit. And there's some conversion projects happening even with residential, multifamily and senior housing starting to figure out
sure.
to convert some of these office buildings. Not very many office buildings can be converted because of the floor plate needs and some other constraints there, but that's starting to pick up. And, you know, everybody knows the baby boomer generation is aging and they're going to need affordable housing because, you know, that was the generation of excess, right? So they didn't save a lot of money. And so it kind of made sense to me that's a great market to be in as well, with some of the conversions and things that are happening with senior housing. So I like that market as well.
Yeah. And now that you're part of a bigger family, you know, tell us about, you know, some of the things that you're seeing across the markets where, you know, Skyline is active. You mentioned a few other industry areas, obviously, you know, TI. There's obviously ground up construction. There's obviously life science, right? But, you know, tell us kind of what are you seeing? What are you kind of hearing from your, you know, peers and your colleagues across the other markets, just in terms of sort of where the industry is?
Sure. So, you know, so healthcare is always a pretty strong industry, reliably so. You know, the OSHPOD hospital environment is not necessarily where we go to look for that, but that is a strong marketplace where we focus a lot of our attention and seeing more activities, that medical office and healthcare microsystem that's around the hospital units, right? There's a lot of medical office, exam rooms, outpatient facilities, veterinarian clinics. all the kind of skincare and med spas and all that kind of stuff that clusters around those environments. Certainly see a lot of activity there that are well-funded activity and need in those environments. And again, just aging facilities that need to be continually updated. So that interiors renovation type mindset does well for us in that market segment. Certainly, you know, the lab environment associated with medical, I've seen that kind of start to take some legs where the hospitals, you know, they're pressured for fast, like speed, like we need results, we need tests, we need this information back and forth more quickly. And they don't want to wait for to send this out to a lab that's, you know, 17 miles away and get the test results back. So you're starting to see smaller testing sites and places that can process test samples very quickly with the technology. Again, that's kind of part of the technology coming and bringing its way into the lab environment where they can speed up the results of things. They can process 10,000 test results instead of 100 in 5 minutes or what have you. So there's a lot of advancement in there, and we're seeing those clusters happening. And we're also seeing more hospitality work. I think that's been a kind of a pent-up industry for a while, certainly because of COVID and the pandemic. Hotels kind of just stopped what they were doing for a minute. They got hit hard. But now I just read an article the other day where San Diego's back on top for the number one tourism destination in the country. And the hotel market's kicking alive, right? Everybody's seen a lot of activity with people wanting to renovate and upgrade and hotels changing hands. So that hospitality market's pretty fire too right now.
Given sort of where, you know, you are and things that you're seeing, how do you think 2024 is going to be different from 2023?
Well, it's certainly going to be different for me. It was a transition, you know, for Prevost Construction to become part of Skyline Family Company. So there's if anybody's ever gone through an acquisition and integrated into the new normal, that was a big year of change. Certainly for the better. I mean, we feel great about the partnership with Skyline and becoming part of the family of companies here. A lot of growth opportunity for our people to become now part of this ESOP and the culture that comes with that. But also, you know, I feel cautiously optimistic about 24. I mean, we're looking at it as a potential growth year, modest growth, 10% or so in revenue is what we're targeting. And we feel like we diversify a little bit, right? We still need to be able to have a focus on life science. We need to keep our office and TI clients you know, close to the best and be able to work with them on their needs as we go forward. We have a lot of great customers that, you know, come back and use us time and time again in the different markets. So as we continue to do that and just leverage those relationships, right now I think it's just kind of a, not a huge growth mode, but just getting really good at what we do, right? I always look at these kinds of periods of time as the time to retool some things, get better at your processes, get better at some of the tools that you use, time to upgrade your technology a little bit, make some in-house self-improvements so that when the market does tank off again, that you're well-equipped to grow rapidly, right? Really build that foundation well and to be able to grow rapidly from there. So we're poised well to do that and have a lot of good leadership in place and across our different companies. So I feel pretty strongly about the fact that this market will work well, but we need some economic signs of life, right? We need some borrowing capacity to kind of get unstuck. And yeah, who knows what's going to go on with the election next year? That's always kind of a weird thing because you never know how that's going to impact the economy and the state of borrowing and construction. But all I know for sure is it's going to be a wild ride, just like 23 was. So looking forward to that.
In terms of, you know, construction costs, you know, often when we talk to developers, they will kind of point to your industry as sort of the reason why everything is so expensive. I am curious as, you know, some of the supply chain tensions have eased. Are you also seeing some ease in terms of just overall construction costs? Obviously, employment is a big part of that, which continues to be a difficult sort of challenge, I think, across industry. But I'd love to hear your kind of perspective on that as well.
Well, sure. I think prices are never going to go down. I can say that for pretty sure. I mean, I found this guide, this pricing guide that we did probably in the early 90s that I was cleaning out my office, and I come across this pricing guide. And I think prices are about 200% more than they were in 93. So I'm pretty sure that'll never go down, but you know, it's like anything else right now. If you've gone through a drive-thru, if you've gone through a fast food and realize that you're paying $15 for a combination meal, which used to be like $5, like not too long ago. It's insane, right? All the industry, it's really just labor and wages. I think most of it is labor wages have gone up everywhere, right? They've gone up in the construction industry because that's what it takes to put the work in place and hire smart people. It's gone up in the manufacturing. It's gone up in every supply chain area possible where, you know, the goods that we procure and put in place on a construction project pass through the hands of so many people. And every time you do that, there's a markup, there's a wage increase, there's the cost of fuel to get it there or to make it. So with all those raw materials and things increasing, it's a natural progression of just everything's going to become more expensive. So what used to be a $50 TI that was $100 TI, now is $150 in San Diego. It's probably $225 in the Bay Area. It's, you know, it's just a proliferation of, it's not going to get any cheaper. It might flatten out and not grow so fast. So, you know, we put a lot of cost escalation on project budgets when we first start out. We do a lot of pre-construction for clients where we're in six months to a year early before we start construction. So we've got to price in some anticipated labor and material escalation costs. So for a while there, we were in the 7-10% range. We've dropped it down now where we're in the 3-5% range. So, you know, depending on the flavor of the client, what they like to see, we generally suggest 3 at the minimum. 3-5 feels safe right now. It depends on the budget and everything else, but that's where we generally sit. But it's down from prior years, but I don't see it ever going to zero.
Right. And that's understandable, obviously, right? So Jamie, I'd like to switch gears a little bit here as we close our conversation. I would love to hear sort of some of your biggest lessons learned over these last, you know, couple of decades that you've been part of the organization, and also, advice to your younger self or a younger person trying to enter the industry today.
Well, it sounds a bit like a cliche, but it certainly is always true. It's just, it's all about your relationships. So, you know, as somebody growing up in San Diego and not knowing the value of that, my father was very, very keen on you know, your commitment to doing what you say you're going to do, and your word is your bond, and a handshake is a handshake deal. You got to look people in the eye and give them your word that it's going to get done. You build relationships over the years in your industry. I certainly feel like over the times that I've had these big lessons learned experiences, it was about, you know, treating the partners in this industry the way you want to be treated. And you're going to see them again and again. We're going to work together, whether you had a bad experience or a good experience, right? We can get through this together and show some professionalism with fellow peers in your industry. So we've certainly, as we've become part of Skyline, that mantra is the same with everywhere we go within the Skyline organization. It's develop and build solid relationships within this industry. They're going to pay dividends in the future as we take care of each other. And certainly that's true today. You know, some of the challenges we've overcome have really just been around, you know, how we take care of our people and the employee experience in general. Yeah. I feel like growing up, right, the culture of work was just, you know, the customer is the number one thing. Make sure the job is done on time and you make money and, you know, you're just lucky to have a job. Just do your job. Don't ask me for a raise and all that stuff. Just go out there and work hard. And the customer is always right. And you know, there is some value to the idea that the customer is always right and we want to take care of our customers and treat them like gold. And at the same time, we need to also develop our employee experience, right? We need to take as much time and focus and energy and spend it on our employees, nurture them, develop them, educate and challenge them, provide the support and the direction for growth within the company. And that's certainly wonderful to see already since we've been part of Skyline. We've transferred 4 individuals from the Bay Area down to San Diego. We've had some people go up into San Francisco and people move from San Francisco to Seattle. So it's great to see the exchange of employees throughout the business. And I've been out to the Chicago market a couple times now and got to see their culture, right? Everywhere we go, the culture and the focus on our people is the same. And I think that really comes from the idea of having an ESOP, right? An employee-owned business mindset, where everybody's an owner. We all are working for the benefit of driving our shareholder value for each other. But also with that, just again, about relationships. We want to be able to be authentic and spend time together and enjoy the company and enjoy the culture of the business that we've created. So I think that as leaders of Skyline and other companies out there, right, it's still always about the core values of your business and how you develop the culture and your employee experience that's going to pay dividends in the long run with your business.
Jamie, thank you so much for that wonderful insight. Appreciate learning more about your company and the industry in general. Stay well and happy new year, I suppose.
All right. Yeah, it's time to start saying happy holidays and we'll see you in the new year, Vlad. Thank you very much.
That was another episode of the Real Perspectives podcast, and we thank you for taking the time to listen to it. Conversations like these help us comprehend our evolving industry better and hopefully provide a perspective that helps you understand the dynamics of commercial real estate. If you like this episode, please subscribe to our show and tell your colleagues about it. That is the best way to spread the news and help us remain relevant across the industry. Cheers!